Hello and welcome to the LGBT Family and Games Community Podcast. My name is James, and today I am joined by Dunkledore.
Hey guys.
There you go. You didn't need as much instruction as Hella. Hella kind of like froze and was like,
I've watched these things before. It always starts with a hey.
Yeah, just a hi, hello, how are you? So for anybody who doesn't know, Dunkledore is actually one of our staff members in LFG. He's been with us for quite some time. And yeah, actually,
quite a few years.
He joined us as one of the moderators of another server that merged with LFG. He didn't have any ownership of that server whatsoever. The joke is, it's kind of an inside joke, but actually, Dunkledore owned a server, had a number of people in it, and one of his moderators reached out to us and said, hey, I kind of want to get out of this, and but I don't want these people to not have a place to be. I want to merge things. And I thought he was the owner of the server. But come to find out, later on, this guy had no ownership of the server. He did, I guess what, a year prior to that or something?
Yeah, he originally owned it, but we kind of ran it as a three, but officially I had ownership. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I forgot another about funny the other thing. Guy.
Yeah, Wink, right? Another funny thing about that merger is that I'm pretty sure I'm the only one still in LFG from it. There's 150 people or whatever. But
potentially, yeah. I mean,
I think I'm the only one remaining. Yeah, it was already quite an aging crowd.
It happens. But anyway, on to podcast topics. I know the last two podcast episodes, we spent a lot of time on some of the politics stuff, the LGBT political things. And hate to break it to you guys, there is still more. It's just been a thing lately. It's been in the news quite a bit. And I think it's important for us to talk about these things because it's important for the community to be informed about what's going on, so that we can react appropriately when it comes time to vote for people who are going to be in office, or so that we're aware of what other people are going through in the United States, because not every state is the same. Some states are better than others right now. But there's a lot on the national platform that has kind of come to light as of late. And I think the first thing that I would like to dive into, because I think it's absolutely, I just don't even know the word for this. I'm trying not to say inappropriate things about this person, but Ted Cruz, I'll just say the name, Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz, was interviewing one of the candidates for FAA administrator. And here's what he had to say. We'll listen to this first, and then we'll talk about it.
Be clear, you and I talked about this. FAA administrator is a specialized position. I'm not qualified to be FAA administrator. I have no idea how to fly a plane. No one in their right mind would put me in charge of aviation safety because I don't have that experience, I suspect.
I wonder why people have put him in charge of anything. But
yeah, that's exactly my flaw. I was like, apply that to your own senatorship.
Yep. I digress. I apologize for interrupting, but anyway.
In fact, most of the members of this committee are in a similar position. The American people, when they think about aviation safety, when they think about, I played in this committee, a Southwest Airlines and FedEx plane almost colliding at Austin's airport. They want an FAA administrator who knows why those planes crash and knows how to fix it to keep them safe. And with all respect, Mr. Washington, it gives no comfort to the flying public that their pilot might be a transgendered witch, but doesn't actually know how to prevent the plane from crashing into the ground and killing them. I believe your record is woefully lacking. And in fact, you have zero aviation safety experience, and I don't believe you'll have the votes for confirmation, as you and I visited about earlier this week.
So there's a little bit to unpack there. It's one thing to say that a candidate is not qualified for the position. So if this person, and I haven't researched this person, I'm not going to. I just personally think that there should be no correlation with what the pilots identify as and their ability to fly safely.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm even surprised that he's even allowed to bring up the fact that they're a transgender person. It, like, in a official government kind of interview, to bring up something not relevant like that, and obviously then use incredibly choice language that's designed to evoke emotion, for sure.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, right now, most of the congressional and Senate hearings in the United States, when they're televised, when they record them, it all becomes a big political stunt because they're trying to get these little sound bites for their base. So, I mean, clearly Ted Cruz was aiming towards putting in the sound bite so that he could be justified in not confirming this candidate. And his base, there's a lot of people in the Republican base, not every Republican, but there's a lot of people in the Republican base that are clearly anti-trans. And that becomes a sticking point for those types of people because, you know, suddenly they're thinking that this candidate for this role supports trans people and I don't want to support that person.
Yeah, almost like association by... I forget the terminology there. Another thing he does as well, which I actually find politicians of all sides tend to do this, is like speaking on behalf of the public when you really don't represent the public. So saying the flying public get no kind of comfort. I think actually if you asked the majority of the public, they would almost not have an opinion on that. Obviously, there's going to be lots of people who would, but probably more who don't care.
Yes. No, I think most people really wouldn't mind. They're not going to care who the administrator is, as long as they have qualifications for that role. And again, there is a separation between somebody being qualified for that specific role and bringing up this other subject. Why do you have to bring up?
Yeah, and also pilots? Like it takes away attention from the important stuff, and then. Even people who would, it's kind of nasty, really, because even people who would potentially support this person is like, well, I don't want it all to be about that. I don't want it all to be about being transgender, which is not the intention of that person at all.
Yeah, and in fact, RuPaul actually recently came out and talked. I'm switching subjects on you, Dunk, a little bit. I apologize. I know you're new to this. Hold on to your hat.
So RuPaul recently came out? I think RuPaul came out quite a while ago.
Touche. No, RuPaul recently came out and talked about the anti-drag bills, because obviously RuPaul's Drag Race, and that's going to have a lot of implications for their show and different things like that. But I felt like what RuPaul said in this video is just on the money for what's going on in the United States right now.
Hey, look over there. A classic distraction technique, distracting us away from the real issues that they were voted into office to focus on. Jobs, healthcare, keeping our children safe from harm at their own school. But we know that bullies are incompetent at solving real issues. They look for easy targets so they can give the impression of being effective. They think our love, our light, our laughter, and our joy are signs of weakness, but they're wrong. Because that is our strength. Drag queens are the Marines of the queer movement. Don't get it twisted and don't be distracted. Register to vote so we can get these stunt queens out of office and put some smart people with real solutions into government. And by the way, a social media post has never been as powerful as a registered vote.
So, stunt queen was a good line.
Oh yeah, no, that was packed full of these little... I actually really enjoyed kind of all the little knocks, but basically the premise is just saying this is a distraction politics, right? Like this 100%. This is a tactic. So they can blow up something about a minority, and they know that the minority itself doesn't have enough power to pull them out of office, right? And that's, I mean, quite frankly, that's why it's cowardice, right? Because went over the statistics. 7.2% of the United States identifies as LGBT, and of that, I want to say 10% identifies as trans. Very small percentage of the overall United States.
Yeah. I got nothing to add. RuPaul said everything I could possibly say there.
Yeah, and I know you have some choice words about Ted Cruz, so we won't go into that much detail, but I'll take us to our next subject. So speaking of trans people, I am very concerned about this rhetoric. There's been a lot of really strong rhetoric against trans people. So at CPAC, which is the basically this conservative conference, it's for the conservative politicians in the United States, so a lot of Republicans. This gentleman, Michael Knowles, of the Daily Wire, was saying that, quote, transgenderism should be eradicated. So I'm going to go ahead and play this clip.
There can be no middle way in dealing with transgenderism. It is all or nothing. If transgenderism is true, if men really can become women, then it's true for everybody of all ages. If transgenderism is false, as it is, if men really can't become women, as they cannot, then it's false for everybody, too. And if it's false, then we should not indulge it, especially since that indulgence requires taking away the rights and customs of so many people. If it is false, then for the good of society, and especially for the good of the poor people who have fallen prey to this confusion, transgenderism must be eradicated from public life entirely. The whole preposterous ideology at every level.
This is the type of rhetoric that's going on in the United States right now. And I know you're from Canada, so you probably don't pay attention to a lot of this, but...
Oh, it comes. It usually comes in a bit of a smaller form 6 months later. That's how Canada works.
Well, and that's the problem, right? Is this will have ripples across the world for transgender people. And unfortunately, everything that gentleman said was incorrect. I understand.
He said it in such a... He used such a... a tactic, like a polarizing tactic, in that it's either everything's either yes or no or right, wrong, and completely ignores anything in between. And so anybody who even has a slight portion or hesitation towards a subject is like, well, I must align with the no then. I must align with the negative.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
yeah.
Exactly. Star Wars reference.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem. The problem is both people on the right and left of the political spectrum, liberals and conservatives, tend to deal in these extremes. And a majority of the average person, I think, understands some of the gray area or would be willing to compromise. But because the rhetoric is becoming so extreme, now more and more people are speaking in those extremes. And it's just... Honestly, it's sad, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of like the excuse of what are we going to do about sports when there's going to be mismatches? And it's like you're taking one, like obviously that's something that needs to have an answer to somewhere, but you're taking one teeny, teeny, tiny portion and completely invalidating the whole thing.
Yeah, and on the topic of sports, we talked about last week that there is now a trans masculine football or soccer for people in the United States team in the UK. So perhaps that's the solution. I don't necessarily like the idea of having to do like separate but equal, but you know, if we are splitting different types of sports by gender and we feel that it's necessary, I personally think that it'd be great for everybody to play on the same teams. But if we feel like we're splitting by different types of identity, then I don't think it would hurt to have all trans teams. Actually, I think that would be empowering because then those all trans teams have sponsorships and money and funding and different sources of revenue and can become even more popular perhaps than other teams.
I certainly agree with that. But there is another point there in that if you take chess, for example, Women have always been able to compete in the male chess competitions, which just have been traditionally dominated by males. And it wasn't until that they had dedicated women's competitions that the women were able to advance and progress to eventually start becoming more represented in the male competition. So while the thing about having trans-only teams, I see it as a stepping stone in that it gives visibility, gives people a chance to progress, but ultimately, I don't know, I'm still undecided. Ultimately, is that an anti-aim, maybe?
I don't know. You know, I don't know what the answer is. What my hope is that we can maybe, perhaps in the short term, come to some types of compromises. Because progress can't and doesn't ever really ever happen immediately. It's usually like small stepping stones that we take to get there. So I think maybe that's one of the small stepping stones. And as more visibility happens and comes about from those teams playing against each other and being televised and things like that, maybe that opens people's eyes to what trans people are like, right? Because yeah, a lot of people
in the current situation, like, that did definitely make sense to have those. It also, yeah, give people a space. So many positives. I just would want somebody to feel empowered to also make the decision to play in a non-trans team if they are trans.
Correct. Yeah, and I can agree with that. Now, I will say this. You know, some of the science behind gender transition says that in the actual diagnosis and prescribing guidelines for gender transition, they outline when certain characteristics begin to take effect and when certain gender, you know, the gender dominant characteristics start going away. So I believe when a trans woman starts transitioning, I want to say it's probably about 1 to 2 years before a lot of the effects would take place that would give them a quote unquote advantage in a sport. So, you know, perhaps the trans teams, all trans teams, are a stepping stone in between, you know, initiating gender transition and then finally achieving gender transition, at which point they'd be recognized for, you know, the gender team that they wish to play for.
Yeah, I've never even thought about it like that. Just understanding that it's not an instant process, and yeah, there's a transition for sure.
And I think scientists say, like, as early as 3 months, those effects begin to take place. I do think that there's probably some lingering benefits that you have just based on how long you've, you know, been a certain gender and before you start transitioning. So, you know, if you're later in your adulthood, it might take longer for those characteristics to fall off and for them to be replaced with other characteristics. But I think it's, you know, certainly something. Again, this is talking about finding a middle ground instead of having these polarizing views of it just can't happen, right?
Like, yeah. And even if, like, let's just take it to a complete extreme and say that we all agreed this isn't true, but let's just say we all agreed that those issues in sport are massive and unsolvable, blah, blah, blah. That's still such a small part of life that shouldn't, like, discourage the rest of it.
I agree.
Like, well, yeah, just because we can't figure out sport, like, what?
And the other, you know, so another one of the talking points is going to be the bathrooms, right?
Yeah.
Because there are currently bathroom bans going across the United States. And in fact, one politician, I'll have to pull it up, I'll probably add it in post, but one politician I saw, he actually got a bill that was on the floor, and it was they were trying to pass a bill that would make it a sex crime for a transgender person to be in the bathroom for the sex that they, for the gender that they identify as, while a child was present, irregardless of what they were doing in the bathroom at the time. So, for example, if a transgender female was washing their hands, a child walks in, they are immediately guilty of a sex crime.
Yeah,
of sexual assault against a minor.
That's wild. I wonder how that plays into high schools as well, when, like, everybody's a minor.
Yeah. Right, so does that mean that a coach can't be in a locker room?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a parent?
I wonder about some countries, they just don't have gendered bathrooms at all.
Exactly,
just,
right?
It's just not a problem. It's just like individual stalls and you go and do business, you leave and you wash your hands.
Well, I kind of wish we would start going that way. I know the infrastructure in the United States, sure. There's no way that could happen. But I think even men would prefer to have their own space. There's an old video on YouTube about the rules of the male bathroom. And it's an animation. Like, somebody actually went, and this is back in the day when animating things was way more difficult than it is now. But somebody actually went through the process of animating, like, when you go into a bathroom and the stalls are all open, you can choose any urinal. But if there's a person here, you must choose the furthest urinal away. You may not choose the one right next to them. And you cannot make eye contact, and you should not speak to somebody. That is a foul. And if somebody speaks to you while you're in the bathroom, then somebody might fall over and die, and then it would cause a chain reaction of death. And blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's all toxic masculinity at its finest.
So you know that got made... Okay, it's kind of really bad, right? But it is humorous. That got made into a game called How Gay Are You? And it was like, you would be given a set of urinals with dudes at them, and you'd have to pick which one you would go to.
Oh,
and
my,
like,
goodness.
If you picked the ones that were like... It was like an iPhone game that was literally called How Gay.
I'm going to have to look that up. That actually sounds hilarious.
So stupid. Yeah.
But point is...
If the urinals are the problem, because, you know, on public, whatever, just make it all stalls.
Make it all stalls, or even, you know... Like full stalls where there's not a space underneath, so that it's more of like a private.
Sure, yeah. You could do like urinals in stalls.
Yeah. Fine dining restaurants in the United States have those for the stalls and like the men's bathroom and stuff, like where it's regular walls. Yeah. Like you don't have any spaces underneath. I prefer privacy. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird.
North America definitely has, like, and I don't know, there's always like gaps as well, I've noticed, since coming to North America in public.
Oh, between the doors, like, yeah.
Just gaps between the doors, and they'll be like this far off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very awkward going to the bathroom. I hate public restrooms.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this type of rhetoric that we were talking about, like the CPAC speech, the problem with it is it's so extreme and it's so reminiscent of the type of rhetoric that happened around the Holocaust.
Yeah,
where we're talking about eradicating entire people from existence, right? Like, they don't want transgender people to exist. Transgenderism should be eradicated. Well, there are people who identify with that.
Yeah, his language is just pretty horrific. It's like, just every single word that he picked was as extreme as it could possibly be to generate as much emotion as he possibly could.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate. And speaking of the Holocaust, recently Steven Spielberg spoke to Stephen Colbert and talked about how not since Germany in the 30s have I witnessed anti-Semitism no longer lurking but standing proud with hands on hips like Hitler and Mussolini, kind of daring us to defy it. I've never experienced this in my entire life, especially in this country. We'll give this a listen.
Young Sam, and I assume young Steven Spielberg, is bullied and feels alienated by his Jewishness. And you've said it took years for you to embrace your heritage and not doing so fully until you were actually making Schindler's List. With the profits of the film, you created the Shoah Foundation. And I'm curious, as someone who's examined his own Jewishness in the place of Jews, not only in the United States, mm-hmm. but around the world, do you find it surprising the rise of public anti-Semitism, not only in the United States, but in authoritarian countries all around the world now?
I find it very, very surprising because anti-Semitism has always been there. It's either been just around the corner and slightly out of sight, but always lurking, or it has been much more overt, like in Germany in the 30s. But not since Germany in the 30s have I witnessed anti-Semitism no longer lurking, but standing proud with hands on hips like Hitler and Mussolini, kind of daring us to defy it. I've never experienced this in my entire life, especially in this country.
That's Steven Spielberg, right? Yeah. And that's the problem that we're running into. We're seeing a lot more divisive behavior across the board.
I'd really like him to, obviously you have no doubts in his what he's saying, but it'd be really good for him to almost narrate some of the experiences he's had, because I think a lot of people would still maybe not even believe him, even after hearing this. But I reckon he's got some crazy stories.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure that there was more to, I mean, this was only, you know, a 30-second, minute-long, maybe, video outtake of this interview. So I'm sure that there was a whole lot more to it. But I've seen a lot more myself. There are a lot of people speaking out against Jews, against Black people, against transgender people, against gay people, you name it. All these minorities are getting...
Everybody has to align, or everything's becoming just super polarized, and just get in your group, and our group's better than your group.
Well, and so here's the flip side, right? So a lot of this has been aimed at some of the conservative talking points, right? You know, we talked about CPAC and how concerning that was, and we talked about Ted Cruz, who's obviously a conservative politician. But the problem is we have similar issues with people that have more liberal ideology and cancel culture. And two episodes ago, we talked about the Hogwarts Legacy game and how people were canceling each other over playing this game, understanding that J.K. Rowling has made some horrendous statements that are anti-trans statements, and there are undertones in the game that could be associated with anti-Semitism in relation to the goblins and some historical events that had happened in the past. So understanding all that, but the fact of the matter is, you know, this whole cancel culture, right? Like saying you have to act a certain way, you have to behave a certain way. So I do relate and understand some of these conservative talking points as far as like freedom of speech and being able to be your own self without, you know, walking on eggshells to try to please everybody. I think we need to get to the point where we're not there, right? Like on both sides, there needs to be a lot more give and take, a lot more forgiveness, a lot more understanding, and we need to like work towards common ground.
Yeah, I'm, as you, I think you know, pretty damn liberal. But
you are. You have pink hair.
But that being said, I also sometimes take a position of you have to convince the people that you don't like. So when people come at me with homophobia, I often try to approach it as like ignorance rather than just bring in hatred and like discount them as a person. It's more that I try and view them as it's unfortunate the collection of events that you've had in your life has led you to this point. Hopefully one day you'll make a different decision.
Yeah. Right.
That's how I try and most of it. Like obviously there's lines drawn when people get violent, when people start to seriously infringe. But that's always how I've dealt with verbal issues. It's almost sympathy for them in that I'm sorry that this is like you haven't had the right thing revealed to you.
Well, yeah, it's unfortunate that that person hasn't interacted with at least one or two gay people or what have you, any type of person that they're discriminating against, to understand that they're just people too.
Yeah, and so when you get often, you know, sometimes gay people have a really harsh reaction to certain things when it's like that reaction might even be justified, but you're not going to win like that.
Well, no, and that's the point, Right. But I completely agree with that. I 100% agree with what you're saying there. And I think we talked about this related to the Hogwarts Legacy game and J.K. Rowling and all the things around that. When people in the LGBT community start sending death threats to people or saying it would be better for you to get hit by a car, if you're going to go buy that game, you might as well go out and into the street and get hit by a car. It's one of the tweets that I pulled up in relation to this. That is such an extreme view in my mind. And I can't believe that people would be okay with going there.
Yeah, it's so unproductive. It's like you're actually doing the opposite of your intention. You're concreting these people's opinions.
I agree with that. I agree that we are doing ourselves a disservice when we become violent protesters.
Yeah.
Because
violence with words too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, violence with words too. We cannot cross that line. We need to be better as a community, as a whole, and approach these situations with compassion and try to understand things and people. Yes, we have, I wonder what the number is now. I know it's over 5,000 people are banned in LFG, right? You know, that's just a reality that we're going to have to deal with. 6,660 bans.
Yeah, I've been on 6, the other 000, side 20, of it. That's actually a stupid number. But like, I've been on the other side of it too, where I'm having a discussion with someone and then they'll irritate, like, I might even have realized that I'm wrong, but they've angered me or they've irritated me to the point at which I'm just going to double down anyway.
Yes.
And it's like, they've engaged in this in a way that's made me so unhappy that I'm just, like, even though I know I'm wrong, I'm not going to give you that.
Exactly. And I think that that's another problem, right? I think that's a fallacy in the thought process of how we approach things. You are never going to convince somebody to admit that they were wrong by making them look stupid.
No. And you're also not going to do it. You're never going to get somebody to admit they're wrong, like, immediately in a discussion. It's never going to happen. They're going to need to go through their own long-term transition. And they also, like, for a lot of people, you have to swallow pride. And that takes time. And that, like, some people just need to be allowed to do that silently.
And some people won't ever want to do that. Right.
Yeah,
so sometimes we have to, maybe pepper them with certain smaller concepts, right? Like, on the big picture, they're never going to swallow their pride and admit that they're wrong. I know plenty of people that are really smart people and they still believe certain things that might get fed to them by a news organization and they don't research, right? You know, there are a lot of people that I know who are conservatives that will say, Republicans don't care about the LGBT issue anymore. You know, that's off the table. That's settled and that's done with. Over 400 laws are being circulated now in the United States since the fall of Roe v. Wade to restrict LGBT rights.
Yeah, it is sad though, because if I take how my brain worked 5 to 10 years ago, I was like, yeah, we're pretty much getting there now. Like,
yeah,
there's still more to do, but we're like almost done. And it's really not that. That's really not the case.
Oh, no. And that's the problem. Is progress is like a pendulum, right? So we swing forward and we get somewhere, but then we will inevitably come back quite a bit before we move forward again. So it's always like a rocket motion. We go forward, we come back, we go forward, we come back. That's the same thing with politics. Like, usually what we see in politics is we see, a liberal. So, for example, in the United States, we had Clinton, Bush, and then we go to Obama, right? So Democrat, Republican, Democrat, and, then we have a further swing conservative with Trump. And then now we have, grandpa who's asleep at the switch.
I mean,
I'm not a fan of Biden, right?
I'd rather he was asleep than he was crashed, like, deliberately driving the car off the off the highway.
Yeah. Look,
If he's asleep, at least maybe the car will keep going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, so he has done some good things, but I, you know, overall, he would not be my candidate pick. I really like Pete Buttigieg personally. And by the way, as a disclaimer, because LGBT Family Games is a nonprofit, this is not an organizational endorsement of a specific political candidate. This is just my personal opinions. And, you know, people are free to choose how they wish.
Yeah, I actually haven't read up a lot of his opinions, but I do think he could present himself a little bit better.
Which one?
Biden. His way of talking, I don't find particularly inspiring.
Well, he's extremely old as well.
We could talk about the aging problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's actually, that's part of the problem that we have, right? Most of the politicians are extremely old compared to their base, right?
Yeah. And
we have this whole baby boomer generation, too.
Well, and you've also got the age is partly reinforced by some of the positions until death type thing, right?
Correct, especially in the Supreme Court. Which, by the way, there was actually a group, and I heard this on NPR, so I'm going to bring it up, and I think it's important, because a lot of people don't pay attention to the Supreme Court until something like the Roe v. Wade thing happens. But Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas, his wife is actually a lobbyist. She heads a lobbyist group, and she is very influential in Washington. And there is a whole question of ethics when it comes to her and him residing over issues that she might have interest in as a lobbyist. So
it's difficult. Actually, it is. That's such a complicated issue, because you would never want to suggest the spouse should be like aligned politically with their partner. But like, the fact of reality is that you do to a degree, like you live together, you talk together, you clearly have alignments, and yeah, you're like, it's such a hard thing to avoid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the reality is these justices don't have a code of ethics. The United States Supreme Court is the only court in the United States that does not have a code of ethics.
Well,
all the lower courts have codes of ethics. And so now I think two organizations came out with drafts of possible codes of ethics for the Supreme Court. The problem is the Supreme Court rules itself. So the Supreme Court would have to actually enact its own code of ethics. Unless Congress came in and passed legislation or increased the count of judges, but we don't necessarily want more judges that have lifetime roles. I personally don't like the idea of them having lifetime roles, but I understand the purpose of it. The purpose of that was to prevent people from being swayed because they have to do, they would have to rerun, right? So it was supposed to prevent political influence from the outside.
Yeah.
But it's all, I mean, all of it is just...
Surely, though, you did actually mention that you wouldn't want more. I felt like a lot of the time you do have strength in numbers.
Well, I don't necessarily want more people in that particular position just because it's a lifetime role. I don't know that I want that many people in a lifetime role. I mean, maybe that dilutes their power, so I could understand it from that perspective. But I'm not a huge fan of a lifetime appointment going to more people.
And I know the problem with a lifetime appointment as well is just almost like fundamentally, it assumes that people do not change, which is
that too.
That's not true. That's totally not true.
Correct. Well, and so the other issue is if Congress were to increase the number of justices, right? Like, so if legislatively they passed a bill and said, we're going to add three more justices to the Supreme Court. The problem with that is that sets up a precedent for the next Congress to do the same thing if the alignment wasn't in their favor, so then they could pack on more people.
It would basically, like, every presidency would be like, let's get three of our own in every single time, basically.
Correct. Yeah. Well, and actually, that was one of the strategies of the Republican Party when they were in office, and you hear them talk about it a lot, about how many justices they confirmed in both the Supreme Court and in the lower courts. So there's a lot of federal justices that were appointed by Donald Trump that have Trump views, right? Trump-aligned views.
I've actually not looked at the equivalent. Just coming from the UK, like, the Supreme Courts don't seem to have anywhere near as the influence that they do in the States, and I wonder what the differences are there as to why, like, we don't have, like, you wouldn't hear in the news about anyone being appointed in the UK. I don't even
know maybe that's appointments best,
like
right?
that. I don't even know if they do, like I'm pretty sure they don't have lifetime appointments. I don't even know how that works.
I'd be interested to look that up as well. Well, we have talked ad nauseum about politics, and we do that every week, but hopefully that dies down a little bit as things hopefully level out. But I think it is, we're in a rough patch for the foreseeable future, and I think it's important for people to know that stuff.
Skip to now if you don't like politics.
So, yeah, skip to now if you don't like politics. Maybe I'll add that. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up, there were a couple of releases coming out that were of note. I sent you a little thing on Punch. I have not seen this. It just came out yesterday. It is a movie about Jim, a 17-year-old boxer who lives in a small town. His father's raising him to be a great boxer. His father, Stan, is treated like a joke in the small town, but he's trying to basically prepare his son for a brutal world. He meets another boy named Wetu, who's gay, and he spends a lot of time with him, and things happen from there. So, limited release in theaters only. This does have Tim Roth in it. He's actually a great actor. He was in, I think it was Lie to Me, is the TV show. But this is a great little LGBT movie. They're not very common. They're usually pretty low budget.
Yeah, I do enjoy supporting these. I do really hope, though, that they haven't, because what I'm seeing from the kind of synopsis of this film is there's kind of like two things going on here. There's like a guy and his dad and the relationship there, and then there's also the kind of like being gay as a boxer and just problems with being youth and gay. So it'd be interesting to see how they marry those two together, and if they do like a half-assed job of both, or if they do a good job of one, that'd be interesting to see.
That's always the challenge, right? So I read a lot of LGBT books, right? And so one of the things I try to look for when I'm picking out a book, or a movie in this case, right, is it a movie that's about being gay, or is it a movie about a person who happens to be gay, right? And that's the question. Is it just focusing on that, or is it focusing on just them living their lives and this happens to be part of it? I actually prefer that part, right? Like, I prefer hearing a story where it's about whatever the story is about. Like, you know, how like Star Trek is about Star Trek, right? Captain Kirk. And he happens to be a narcissist. You know, but it's not a movie about a narcissist who happens to be Captain Kirk.
Yeah, this film could certainly go either way. Like, they do obviously have The Shack, which is going to be a whole thing. So probably is more of the first category of a film about LGBT life, as opposed to one that just happens to include. But I hope they don't completely make that the kind of the subject matter.
Well, I was encouraged to at least see one actor that I knew in this film.
Tim Roth.
The fact that Tim Roth is in it, I think that he has a great, great style of acting. I like the characters that he's done in the past.
He was in Pulp Fiction.
Yes, he was in Pulp Fiction.
Well, he's been in a lot of Quentin films, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I remember him in Planet of the Apes as well. Yeah. Nice.
I actually don't remember him in Planet of the Apes. I saw that he was in that, but I don't remember him being in it.
I'm pretty sure I remember it. Maybe I'm getting myself confused.
But anyway, that's just a little bit about that release. Not going to go too much further into that.
We'll see how Brokeback Mountain-y it is.
Wow. A couple other things, some premieres that are happening. Next in Fashion season 2 premiered on Netflix on March 3rd. If Hella was here, they bailed on us for game night, but if Hella was here, I'm sure they'd be talking about this emphatically. I don't watch this show, so I have nothing to say about Next in Fashion. And given your pink hair and gray t-shirt, I think you probably don't have anything to say about it either.
Are you saying this isn't fashion? No. I like fashion, but a very small subset. I really enjoy timeless outfits that you can, like, I pretty much have a wardrobe that would have worked in the 50s and will work in the 2050s as well.
Gray t-shirts?
They're not all gray t-shirts.
Okay. Just checking.
But that does work. There's a statement, right? It's kind of like somebody who doesn't like the limelight. They say, like, dress to be unnotable, but not so unnotable that you are in itself notable. Like a guy dressed in a white jacket, a white tie. Like, that guy is not gray. I mean, that guy is too gray. That's too gray.
Yeah. Well, most of my wardrobe is black t-shirts.
And then most of my wardrobe is what is no longer destroyed from my childhood.
I probably don't fit in half of the stuff I have in my closet. But also, Miley Cyrus released an album on the 10th, so yesterday, called Endless Summer Vacation.
I am a fan. I don't really listen to her music all the time, but she is a talented singer. There's no doubt about that. And I think she's arced well. I think she's doing all right.
I think she has a cool voice, but I think her, like, I actually listened to the entire album. I was playing a little bit of League before recording the podcast. I listened to her entire album while playing a couple ARAMs, and it all kind of sounded the same.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe I should give it a listen.
But yeah, maybe at some point give it a listen and tell me what you think. Because I'm not a Miley Cyrus fan, but I figured, you know, this is something to talk about, and I thought, you know, maybe I would like one of the songs and be like, this was a really cool song, you guys should check it out. But there was like one main song that has the most listens. It was, I think it was Flowers or something. Was the name?
Yeah, to be fair, actually, it is her covers and her kind of like one-offs that are that really seem to have the talent.
Yeah, like she had the Wrecking Ball. Yeah, Flowers. Flowers has 663 million plays on Spotify, and
one day
the next highest was 3.8 million.
Yeah. Well, I'll listen to it. I'll get in a Miley mood.
That's your mission for next week when you join us back on the podcast. I like your pink hair.
I do too. You know, so I got it professionally done, and it was 3.5 hours. $250, whatever. But I enjoy that it's uneven. It's like it didn't take, you know, some light.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not usually one. Well, first time I've dyed my hair in like 7 years, but I'm liking it. I don't know.
Just that's what a professional job looks like. They don't do a solid. They never really do a solid.
Yeah. I just wanted something fun.
Yeah. Something it looks fun. Good.
Appreciate
you it. Watch the Scream movies by chance?
I'm actually terrible with horror movies. So, like, jump scares, no. They always get me. So, like, jump scare films, they're okay, but I don't know. I don't enjoy jump scares that much. And then the creepy ones, I just tend to not find them creepy and just boring. So, like, Paranormal Activity. I've watched a few. I watched The Strangers. That was a good film. The Strangers was all right. And then...
What about The Conjuring, those types?
I'm really going to show my lack of horror knowledge here now. I avoid them.
Oh, you avoid them that much.
Okay. I really just avoid horrors, yeah. It's not my thing.
Well, I've noticed for some reason it seems to be a trend that gay twinks, as far as I've noticed...
Is that what you're calling me?
No, I'm not calling you that.
Okay, good.
You'll see where I'm going. What I have noticed is gay twinks love horror. Like the more effeminate guys seem to love horror. And I think from what I've noticed is more masculine gay guys really don't care for it.
I could see that. I'm just kind of like going through the people that I've met in life, and that seems to be a matching stereotype.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's been an observation of mine.
Yeah.
Andrew
must love horrors.
He does. He loves horror movies. And in fact, we watched, it wasn't The Conjuring, it was Insidious. We were watching it when it came out, and we were at my parents' house. He fell asleep in the middle of it.
Wow.
But it was so scary that I had to watch the entire way through so I could go to sleep. So that there would hopefully be some type of resolution at the end. Because that's another thing for me is, like, if there's no resolution, if it's, like, still kind of, like, hanging out there, like, my mind doesn't like that. Like, it needs some kind of closure. So if
the only one that ever messed me up. Yeah, no, which sorry, one? Go on. Saw. Saw was the only one that had me in some...
I don't think I've seen that.
Like, you know what it is, though, right? Like, Saw 1 to 5.
Oh, Saw.
Sorry, British accent. People don't... Saw.
British accent. I heard Soul.
Yeah, no, Soul.
Like, Soul. Are you talking about that one, like, cartoon?
Most of them don't bother me, but there was just a couple of scenes that just... I don't know, they just sat with me, and then they just kept playing themselves in my mind. They are pretty trash films, but some scenes stuck with me.
I think I became immune to those. I intentionally watched all of them because, again, I noticed the stereotype that, you know, kind of the more effeminate dudes liked these scary movies, and Saw was really popular when I was, like, really, really into dating. So I made sure that I watched them so that if I got asked to watch them with somebody else, I wouldn't be freaking terrified.
I think another thing with those twinks you're referring to, they also enjoy like murder documentaries.
Oh yeah, true. In fact, I have told people that if I go missing, it was probably Andrew.
You're right.
Because I feel like he's watching those.
All of the secrets.
Yep, I feel like he's watching those as, like, instructional videos for what do I do if I'm trying to get rid of James.
Yeah.
Hopefully it never comes to that.
I hope so.
But I figured I'd bring up Scream 6 releases in theaters on March 10th. So that was yesterday. By the time this airs on the podcast channels, it'll be a few days ago. We talked about Punch. That was also released on the 10th in select theaters, limited theaters. And on the 14th, Gotham Knights is going to premiere on the CW. And I actually watched the trailer for that. It looks interesting. That's the one where, in that series, it's the first season. This is not a spoiler. It's in the trailer. Batman is killed and his adopted son is kind of framed for his murder and arrested and a bunch of other things. Groups up with other people to kind of figure out what happened to Bruce Wayne. And why he was murdered. So that looks interesting. I might try to watch that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for sure. There was the game as well, right? Like in
yes, it was
year.
A game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a game.
Yeah, the TV series. It's probably going to be more enjoyable than the game. I would have thought.
It looked pretty good.
It sounds like you can do quite a lot with that.
It actually looked pretty good. It looked like they had decent graphics. Like, DC has been failing and failing and failing on their movies, but maybe they get a series right.
Consistently.
Which is sad because I was a huge, like, when I was a kid, I was a DC fan. Like, yeah. I had Batman figurines. I loved Superman. I had a stuffed animal that I tied a little red handkerchief around and I called it, like, Super Cat or something.
Like, Superman, I was a big fan of. My dad showed me a lot of the Superman films throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they're golden. They're so good.
But it seems like the Jack Snyder cut of the Justice League was better than the original, even though it was, like, way too long. But everything else, it's just like there was no cohesive vision. Right, like nobody actually, like, mapped out what they were going to do.
It seems actually like DC, they almost, maybe it's not kind of like not necessarily their fault, like it is, because they got to make movies that people want, but people's attitudes have changed, and Marvel really got it right with the visuals and the kind of universe and that kind of thing. Whereas if you kind of look at the storytelling and the visuals of the old Superman films, like, they weren't visually spectacular even for the time, but they carried themselves still. And it seems like maybe DC didn't adapt.
They didn't adapt. I have noticed, like, DC seems to be kind of on the darker end of the spectrum. And I feel like if they're going to go with that, right, like if they're kind of known for that, they've really got to roll with it.
Yeah. They should do like, I don't know, like a villain film where like the whole thing's the villain, but you end up like really liking them or something.
Well, I feel like they were starting to kind of understand that. I digress a little bit. I do think that the Batman Begins with what's his name?
Christopher. Are we talking about Nolan era?
Yes. Those were good. I think that's the right person. But where they had the first one was the Joker, second one was had Bane.
Yeah, actually, to be fair, like the Batman films, they did fairly okay, but they haven't really captured the whole universe. Like the ones where they brought in Superman and stuff, just garbage. I really didn't enjoy the one with
Ben Affleck.
Well, just even like the female captain, no, the female superhero, the girl that Dot plays her.
Oh, you didn't like her?
One of her individual films, I could go into some detail there, but the ones that she was in, the film that she was in with Batman, Superman, and her, like
Justice League.
That was Justice League? That was what it was called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't like the one where there's like a house party and she goes down to the kind of the basement and is doing some kind of reconnaissance and stuff. Yeah, that film did not carry well with me.
Yeah, I feel like her individual films were pretty good, but there were certainly some issues with the new ones. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to be able to fix that anytime soon. They really just have to kind of completely redo things.
They need to start again almost. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And start fresh. But last couple premieres things. Good Trouble, don't know anything about it. Season 5 premiere on Freeform on March 16th. Yellow Jackets Season 2 premiere on Showtime on March 26th. And Riverdale Season 7 premieres on the CW on March 29th. My nieces loved Riverdale. I thought it was kind of cheesy and annoying, but it's basically like the Archie comics come alive.
I'm with it. Yeah.
And they were watching
Supernatural Horror, like the Supernatural Horror series.
Well, which one?
Something different here.
Riverdale is not Supernatural Horror. At least.
Oh, okay. Not no, that I know. There's two called Riverdale. But yeah, no, I'm with you now.
Okay. And you said something about a recent release that kind of bombed, right? Like a game?
Well, it's kind of mixed, really. So Kerbal Space Program 2. For those of you who don't know, Kerbal Space Program 1, incredible game, holds a special place in my heart. The whole idea of the game is that you build spaceships and you put them into space. Sounds kind of boring, but they executed the game really, really well, and they balanced physics with kind of actually being able to play the game and it not being really, really difficult. They balanced it really, really well, and it actually taught me so much about how orbits work and how kind of like transitioning to different planets and slingshotting off different planets. Really, really interesting. You can do stuff like build a space station, dock with it. You can do spacewalks with these little, they're called Kerbals, and they're like these tiny little, almost like green minions. Dudes, right? Yeah, they're green dudes. And then you like progress and you unlock science, and then your ships get bigger and bigger and you get further and further away. Kerbal Space Program 1, very great game. They also had mods. They really appreciate their modding community, which just opens up a whole lot of potential. But Kerbal Space Program 2 was meant to be just all of the weaknesses of number one, which was its difficulty. Even though they did make the science understandable, it still was brutally difficult. They're also adding multiplayer. They're adding setting up bases on different planets, and they're also adding interstellar travel. So all of that sounds incredible. And they're adding a really good tutorial that is meant to teach people how to do... Because actually, rendezvousing in space with an orbiting capsule is insanely difficult. If you actually try and do the math and you try to do that yourself, it's so hard. But they've apparently got a really good tutorial, which is meant to make it easy and understandable for people to do that kind of stuff. But like a lot of games recently, they released it too early. And it can only play on the most powerful PCs, and even then, it's still pretty much unplayable from crashes and stuff, which is such a shame. I hope that they don't just take the money that they earned from it and move on to something new. But their whole studio is about this game, so I do trust in them. And they've hired like a lot of good talent. But, you know.
Hopefully they make it right. I'm really excited. If they don't make it right, maybe Elon Musk will come in and buy it so that he can try to teach a whole new group of scientists on how to get to Mars.
Honestly, if you want a fundamental knowledge of, really fundamental, of like what happens if you increase speed as you're orbiting a planet, what happens if you change pitch and that kind of stuff, it's really cool. They put a lot of effort into, like, not everything's totally accurate, but the stuff that is inaccurate doesn't really matter. It's like speed and distance, but the general premise of how things work, super accurate.
Interesting. Well, I never played that one. I played, was it X4? Was it? But it's not nearly the same type of game, right? Like it's more of like a space sim where you like kind of try to build an empire. You start out with one ship and then you try to, you do like missions and stuff and build up, but completely different concept. But I did see the release video of that, like their trailer video, and it looked pretty cool. I don't know if it's one that I will play. Yeah, how does it compare to Astroneers?
Astroneers is
more fictional, right?
Yeah, I say Astroneers. Well, yeah. So in terms of the style, actually, they're both very cartoony. So if you like the Astroneers style, Kerbal Space Program isn't quite so saturated. Like there's a lot of popping colors in Astroneer. But if you like the style of the characters and stuff, it's pretty similar. Astroneer was more about your work on the ground, whereas Kerbal Space Program is very much to do with your work in the sky. And then Astroneers, great game, love it, but it's not accurate at all. It's not remotely accurate.
Well, no, because like you, I think I watched you play Astroneers a little bit with Xavier and other people in the server, and like I think you were talking about like as long as we have this one oxygen module here, you can sit on a seat on the outside and you'll be fine.
Yeah, so that's true. And actually, on Kerbal Space Program, Astroneer doesn't really take into account physics. So if you've got somebody in a seat on the outside, doesn't care about wind resistance or whatever. Kerbal Space Program, while you're flying, you can take your Kerbal and you can get him out of the ship. And he'll be able to hold on for a certain amount of speed. And then eventually the air resistance will get too much and it will like blow him off.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But you don't have to worry about things like oxygen. Like they're just in a permanent spacesuit.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to worry about like a finite resource like oxygen, but it's more about managing wind resistance and
Astroneers is about characters that go into spaceships, whereas Kerbal Space Program is about spaceships that you can put characters in.
Got it. Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's a good comparison. I actually appreciate that. Okay. Well, speaking of nerdy shit, let's talk about your bot, Mr. Bubba.
Yeah, so it's been in the news. You've heard about ChatGPT, right? But recently,
it's all over the place.
It's all over the place, and we could do a whole episode on that. But tons to talk about there with different ethics and all kinds of fun stuff.
Well, do me a favor. We're going to continue to talk about Bubba, but at some point, you and I, let's connect and let's do a segment on ChatGPT.
Yeah,
we'll do a pre-recorded segment. We'll talk about ChatGPT, introduce some topics, and then we'll play that segment during one of the next podcast episodes, and then our guests and stuff at the time can talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. There's some really interesting stuff, and they've got actually, and now they recently released like a lab, so you can quite easily go online and experiment on different things and be good for a demo. What they've done recently, though, which is kind of relevant for us here at LFG, is we've got a bot already. It's called Bubba, and it used ChatGPT's completion API. For those of you who don't know, an API is just how you talk to it. So they had a thing called completion where it would, you give it a prompt and it would give you back an answer. That's great and that's fun. But that's not really what ChatGPT is. That is just GPT. And the thing that people go online and they have that conversation, that's
ChatGPT. What is GPT?
GPT is a language prediction model. So I don't know what it stands for, but essentially GPT predicts the next word in the sentence. That's all it ever does.
Got it.
It doesn't think, and then ChatGPT uses GPT to do a chat. But it's the same fundamental technology. They've just kind of like wired it up differently to do conversations.
Got it.
But all it is not thinking. It is not doing anything really remarkably special. Obviously, the technology is incredibly impressive, but it's consumed a huge amount of the internet, and it just uses that and says, what's the most likely word to appear next in the sentence? And that's all it is. But last week, they released their chat API. So what you see when you go to their website and you have that conversation, as of like last week or 2 weeks ago, they've made that available to other people to use programmatically. So you don't have to go to their website to use it. So what I'm working on at the moment is adding that to our bot, Bubba, so that not only can he respond to things that people will say, but he'll also be able to maintain a conversation with multiple people.
Nice. So yeah, basically you're taking the API, right, is a way for us to interact with what they have available on the website in a different way.
Yeah.
So they've got through a Discord bot.
They've got really powerful computers, and before, to do the chatting, the way that you would communicate with the computers was going to their website. Now you can do it from programs, like programming from code. So you pretty much at that point, that enables people, developers, to turn it into whatever they want. And for us, we're going to make it into a little Discord bot.
Nice. Can Bubba solve world peace for us?
Bubba will do his best, but that one might be a bit tough.
What type of personality is Bubba going to have?
Bubba is a, I guess...
Bubba.
He's a Southern American farmer with one tooth and a red cap. That's Bubba.
He doesn't just have one tooth.
Okay, does he have two?
I think he has two.
Okay.
I can't remember. We might have used... we might have used AI to generate the image of Bubba.
We did actually, yeah.
And yeah, I did.
Think about The Simpsons. Who's the guy who lives in the trailer park in The Simpsons?
I don't know, actually. I was never a Simpsons guy.
Well, there's a guy in The Simpsons who's like, trailer park dude, got a Southern accent, lack of teeth. This is almost like that guy.
Cletus.
Yeah.
Exactly what I was thinking of when we talked about Bubba and what Bubba might look like. I was definitely thinking about this guy.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to go with him is like, I don't know how well I'll get it to do this, but the way in which Bubba will reply will be almost kind of like dumb, but the things that he'll be saying will be quite intelligent.
That's what I'm hoping that's the case, because I think that'll be freaking hilarious.
We'll see. They still need to work on their API, and like, you know, this is going to take off. It really is. I will hold my tongue for our future snippet.
Well, earlier today, I asked Bubba, should I ban Dunkledore? And he said, good.
Bubba was tired.
Oh, I said, I am going to ban Dunkledore. Bubba says, good. And then I asked him how my farts smell, and he said good too.
Bubba's confused at the moment. Bubba's still in school.
Okay. Well, hopefully Bubba learns quickly and we can release that to the community, because that'll be a lot of fun.
I'm excited. Yeah.
And you said contextually, like, he can learn about, potentially, he can, like, learn about LFG in the future and, like, answer questions about LFG.
Yeah, or, so they've like, added the ability to, before, when you were talking to ChatGPT, you were able to say, give information, but only in your message. So you could say to it, your name is Bubba, what is your name? And then it would reply and say, my name is Bubba. But the problem with doing that is, one, you kind of have to send it with every message, and two, it unfairly weights that information in that if you say kind of like you're an LGBT Discord bot, every single message it says, hey, I'm an LGBT Discord bot. Hey, I'm Bubba, an LGBT Discord bot. So
it's not quite so smart.
No, so what they've done now, hopefully, is able you to give it context, but for it to know that context and use it appropriately, but not just completely take it as the priority.
Got it.
So it knows that it's called Bubba and it knows that it's a Discord bot, but it's only going to bring that up if it's relevant, only if somebody says, like, what's your name? What are you like? And then I'm hoping as well you can give it context information. For example, I could say, like, certain rules, like, how do you get verified in LFG? And then it would know how to get verified in LFG, so no matter how you ask that question, it will be able to give you the right response. But
that would
I'm still working on that.
It takes time. Any kind of program takes time.
And they also, like, the like, I certainly do not have the talent to build anything like ChatGPT, so I'm very much just using their tools. So as they get more and more advanced, then I'll just take those benefits.
I think you're smart enough to build a.
I can do some basic AI. I've built something that will, like, take pictures of shoes and tell you if it's a shoe or not. But AI is actually its whole other beast, and it's just because you're good at computer science, you need to. That probably means that you can learn it and you can adapt to it, but you're going to have to put in thousands of hours. Like, it really is a complex beast at the moment.
So how does, big picture, right? Like, talking to somebody like they're a dummy, me, how does AI from a fundamental level work?
Oof. wow. Well, that actually depends on what... That really depends on the definition of AI, right? So artificial intelligence can be exceptionally dumb. Like, something that responds to set responses is some level of AI. Like, if you give set responses and then it just says, when you say what's the weather and it tells you what the weather is, that is a form of intelligence. And even just kind of, if you ask something to, like, pick between different things, but you gave it weights based on certain information, that is a form of artificial intelligence. The thing that's really big and popular now that's made a lot of technological developments, which is what most people are calling AI, is language prediction models.
Got it.
And they use something pretty complicated, which I actually should probably come back with a explain like I'm five explanation, but I don't really have one at the moment. And it's basically predicting the next word using something called a neural network, which is like an imitation of the cells we have in our brain. So it takes tons and tons of inputs, thousands, millions and millions of inputs, processes them through a million fake brain cells, and then gives you certain outputs.
Got it.
But processing through those millions of brain cells is not something that we can understand as kind of like, it's almost like a black box.
Well, I think that's the rub, right? How much of this are we doing without understanding what exactly we're doing, and how much trouble are we going to get ourselves into?
Yeah. And that's all to do with the ethics, which is definitely going to be an exciting conversation. If you like hearing about kind of like ChatGPT and AI, Rob Miles from Computerphile does incredible videos. genuinely alleviated some of my concerns, opened some of my eyes, and he opened some of my eyes, opened my eyes, and has a really good understanding of three. He's got a really good understanding of just how AI works and a lot of the problems.
Cool. Well, again, I think we need to do we'll do a separate segment on that at some point. In the meantime, that's all we got for today. So I'm going to wrap it up there. Make sure if you did like this podcast episode to like and subscribe on YouTube or follow our channel on the many, many different podcast networks that we're on. We're on Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartMedia, you name it, we're there. So pick your favorite, search for LGBT Family and Games, and we'll be there. All the links are going to be in the description and in our channel information, so make sure to check those out. Join us on Discord. You can actually be part of this conversation in the future. You can talk about whatever subject you'd like to. We actually have a form in the Discord that you can fill out and submit a subject that we'll bring up. Some of the subjects that we brought up today were submitted that way, and more, obviously, in the future can be done that way. You can join us in the live recording. You can talk to us just in the text chat in the live recording to give us your input, or you can actually call in live to the show and either be seen or heard on our podcast every week. We will be posting this on Tuesday, and then the video version should come out the following Friday and or Saturday, just depending on how long it takes to edit. And until then.